Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Ian, we start with the good. Jim and I touched on this a couple of days ago. Whenever there's a fundraising scandal, the Clintons can't be too far away. And that is the story once again. The story is actually getting worse for them, which means it's better news for conservatives and
That's right.
most likely whoever is the 2016 Republican presidential nominee, since Hillary at this point seems to have a stranglehold on the nomination, assuming she runs. The scandal the other day that they were trying to clear up was that, we didn't take any foreign donations while Hillary was Secretary of State. We signed an agreement with the administration. We accepted foreign donations up to the point she took the job, and we've taken them since she left in 2013, but absolutely no conflicts of interest while she was Secretary of State. Untrue. The new disclosures, this is according to the Washington Post, provided in response to questions from the Washington Post, make it clear that the 2008 agreement did not prohibit foreign countries with interests before the U.S. government from giving money to the Clinton Foundation, which was obviously closely linked to the Secretary of State. In one instance, foundation officials acknowledged they should have sought approval in 2010 from the State Department Ethics Office, as required by the agreement, for new government donors before accepting a $500,000 donation from the Algerian government. And it turns out there were several different governments to the tune of millions of dollars that ultimately came in during those 4 years. So they got some splaining to do.
It's extraordinary. It's unsurprising, but it's extraordinary that you can have the Secretary of State, the chief diplomat in charge of representing the United States abroad, privately receiving millions of dollars from foreign governments. It's not just an extraordinary conflict of interest, but a huge ethical question. And again, we come to the Clintons, and these things are never particularly surprising. All of these revelations, we seem to just roll our eyes and say, should have seen that coming. But the way that she has, as you said, seemed to lock down the nomination for the Democrats should leave the party extremely concerned that they've basically set their hopes on this single candidate. And I would say we're only in the process of finding out a lot of seedy, sketchy things about the Clintons and Hillary particularly.
Ian, when you look at this, obviously the vast majority of voters are already tilting one way or another. For those who generally make up their mind and could be swayed by either party, are they generally going to say, oh my gosh, here we go with the Clintons again? Or do you think with all that's going on in the world, like we're going to talk about in our second martini, a lot of foreign challenges, still an economy that's in rough shape, people are going to be all that worried about what the Clinton Foundation's doing?
A good Republican candidate, especially, and a vigorous right-wing media, should be able to forcefully articulate the problem with this. When you look at the way the world has seemingly collapsed in significant ways over the past 6 years, to then say you're going to elect someone who is almost literally in the pockets of foreign governments is not a way to show that the United States is interested in reasserting its influence abroad. A good Republican candidate should be very clear about the way that these ethical concerns are disqualifying for a commander in chief.
Guess that wasn't one of the hard choices, huh?
Apparently.
Apparently not, and clearly they're not dead broke either. All right, on to the bad martini now, Ian. And obviously, one of the big concerns right now deals with ISIS. It seems like every week or two we get another grisly video, the beheading of the 21 Coptic Christians in Libya. There were reports of upwards of 40 being burned to death in Baghdadi in Anbar province in Iraq. Now there's more reports of 90 or so, maybe even up to 200 Christians in Syria being abducted by ISIS. And who knows what's going to happen to them, although we can probably guess. At the same time, though, we do know that the Peshmerga forces up in the Kurdish area of Iraq were able to beat back ISIS around the town of Kobani. So over on MSNBC, Joe Scarborough is suggesting to the chief foreign affairs correspondent for NBC, Richard Engel, that, hey, it looks like ISIS could be back on their heels. Turns out, no, they're not.
They do seem to be back on their heels. What are you hearing over there, though? I would not be overly optimistic that they are back on their heels, frankly. There's been some advances in Baghdadi that the government is talking about. The Kurds, who took that strategic supply route a couple of weeks ago, are still advancing. And there's a Shiite militia that is massing on the edge of Tikrit. I don't know if you consider that progress or the opposite. But ISIS still controls the main cities of Raqqa and Mosul. And ISIS just broke out into Libya. It is effectively taking over a new country. So if that is defeat of ISIS or ISIS on the road to defeat, I'd hate to think what ISIS success would look like.
Ian, on a network with questionable news-giving abilities, Richard Engel is one of those folks, since he's in the midst of all this, who usually cuts it pretty straight. And regardless of your political stripe, pretty depressing with how he characterizes the status of ISIS right now.
Yeah, that was good on him for being honest, even if it is dark news. There's simply no one in the Middle East that has the capacity to defeat ISIS. You have a huge network, one that has popularity not just in the region, but abroad, as we saw in Brooklyn as recently as last night, and that can operate on a shoestring budget. Meanwhile, they took all the money in all of the cities that they've conquered. You know, they took over the banks in Mosul. They're gaining revenue from the oil fields that they now control. So you have a truly metastasizing terror threat. And as Richard Engel points out, one that's moving into new territory. And the United States is, at least in the administration, is denying that the threat really exists. And what we refuse to do is to offer, even if you want to say that the United States shouldn't be putting boots on the ground, we can have that debate, but we should at least be supplying arms to Jordan and the Peshmerga fighters and others who are able to resist ISIS basically out of sheer pluck. That's the only way that they're handling the situation, and that's not going to last.
On to the crazy now, Ian, and we're actually a little bit sheepish about giving this airtime, but, you know, it just comes with the territory. It's almost a presidential election year, so this story is going to happen, at least right. For the fourth or fifth time. I've lost count. But anyway, here's the Washington Post version from Bob Costa. This time, Donald J. Trump says he really means it. The billionaire real estate mogul, who has long amounted to a one-man sideshow in GOP presidential politics, said in an interview Wednesday he is more serious than ever about pursuing a run for the White House in 2016. In recent days, Trump said he has hired staffers in key primary states, retained an election attorney, and delayed signing on for another season as host of NBC's The Celebrity Apprentice because of his political projects. Quote, everybody feels I'm doing this just to have fun or because it's good for the brand. Well, it's not fun. I'm not doing this for enjoyment. I'm doing this because the country is in serious trouble. Unquote. Ian, are you buying it this time?
I love that Donald Trump can look at the presidential field that's cropped up for Republicans this year and say, you know what they need? Me. Look, Donald Trump is not a serious person. He's obviously not a serious presidential contender. But there might be a somewhat serious point to be made here, which is that Donald Trump is the sort of extreme instantiation of a celebrity culture that exists in politics, certainly on the left, but even on the right, where someone who's able to generate a lot of noise and produce a huge amount of color becomes suddenly a viable or desirable candidate. So even if that's not Donald Trump, we could certainly think of other examples of people who are not serious candidates, who would not be good presidents, but who are sufficiently colorful that a portion of Republican voters seem to think that they would make good choices for the White House. That's a dangerous impulse, and it's something that Republicans need to be very cognizant of going into 2016. There have been many pieces written on our website about how we need to pick someone first and foremost competent, first and foremost good at this job, not just someone who's going to have one-liners. And frankly, I think the country would be much better off if Donald Trump allowed some other people to have the limelight, and he could spend some more time with his hair.
Ian, do you find it weird that while conservatives generally don't care for what celebrities have to say, since most of them are on the left. When one of them does trickle over to the right, we kind of seem to have, I don't know about fawning's the right word, but giving them far more attention than they deserve. Schwarzenegger comes to mind.
Sure, he,
obviously,
sure.
His tenure as governor wasn't that great from a conservative perspective. Now you've got Trump, and anytime a Hollywood celebrity comes out as a conservative, I guess you could say, they tend to be very much lauded on the right. So do we have a little bit of a hypocrisy problem there?
Well, there's I think a lot of it stems from novelty, the fact that you know, it doesn't happen all that often. So one of these people comes over to our side and suddenly they're lionized. The distinction that we need to draw is between the importance of conservative leanings or conservative inclinations within the field that these people represent. You know, it's great to have John Voight or Fred Thompson or whomever expressing conservative views within the field in which they are experts, that is the media, Hollywood, the arts. But we have this strange inclination to say, oh, these people are conservatives in Hollywood. Obviously, they would be great conservatives in the legislature or in a governor's mansion. That makes absolutely no sense. It has happened that you have the occasional person who can wear fashionably a couple different hats, but that's certainly not the case with Trump. And we ought to be very careful about making those distinctions.
Ian, ultimately, the way this is going to work, right, is that the ego that could get him in is the same ego that's going to keep him out because he knows he can't win, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Ian, great to have you subbing for Jim. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks so much, Greg. Looking forward.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.